Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on social media, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls on Twitter. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. And subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. If you haven't given our friends over at Locked On Cubs, Locked On White Sox, or Locked On Bears a listen, you like what we're doing here at Locked On Bulls, make sure you're going to give them a like, a subscribe on social media, and on any of your favorite podcast providers. I swear their shows are fantastic too. Gives you all your insight into your favorite Chicago team, so go give them a listen as well. Today's one of the few days in sports where I get extremely excited. I think this is one of the few days of the year that I really look forward to as a sports fan, not just specifically for a specific team, but in general as a sports day, and that's the first round of the NCAA tournament tips off. You've got games going from 11:15 in the morning Central Time here to all the way at 9:15 at night, and you know that late game for Eastern Time, for people who live in the Eastern Time Zone, that game might not end till early morning tomorrow. So you've got college basketball all day. Whether you're checking your phone, you're making sure your bracket isn't busted early and often today, especially in the first day, it's an exciting time. As an NBA fan, as a college basketball fan, it's one of my favorite days of the year. And hey, even if you aren't a college basketball fan, I promise you there's still something here for you. Obviously, the Bulls got two first-round picks in this upcoming 2018 draft. So this is, if you're going to pay attention at all and you're not a huge college basketball fan, you didn't fill out a bracket this year, it's not your cup of tea. I still suggest to check in on some of these games and some of these prospects. And that's why we brought on Ricky O'Donnell as a guest today to talk about all college basketball, the first weekend of the tournament here. Some Bulls news and notes from him and a really fun Bulls bracket from this season that he did. And Matt Peck goes in deep with Ricky on this. And he has a great article up at SB Nation that I suggest you guys go check out. But all that and so much more on this interview. And it was fantastic. It was always a great time talking to Ricky. He knows all of his college basketball stuff. So hopefully this gets you in preparation and a little bit more excited as a Bulls fan to start watching the NCAA tournament this weekend. But without further ado, here is SB Nation's Ricky O'Donnell.
Right now, we're very pleased to welcome back to Locked On Bulls our guy, Ricky O'Donnell, a college hoops editor and NBA assignment editor at SB Nation. And as it says in his Twitter bio, just like myself, just like Jordan, an emotionally fragile Chicago sports fan. Ricky, what's going on, bud?
What's up, dude?
Pretty excited about this tourney we got starting tonight, or actually starting in just a couple of hours. First game at like around 11 a.m. after the first fours earlier this week. And obviously we want to get some of your thoughts on these college prospects, the NBA prospects that are going to be playing in this first round. Some who are probably going to be falling in that realm of 6 to 10 if that's where the Bulls end up staying in this draft. But before we get to that, have to get your thoughts on something that you did earlier this week, which is absolutely fantastic for SB Nation. Bulls Bracket 2018, the best memes and moments of the Bulls season. Now, obviously, all sorts of people have chimed in with their various opinions about which moments and memes and you know, Bulls tidbits made the Final Four. Obviously, we're all a big fan of the Zach LaVine giving a girl a puppy thing because that was adorable and cute. And everybody loves the little kid who did a backflip during the dunk contest, all sorts of great stuff. But I have two bones to pick with you, and I think that I am not alone in this. Nick Friedell laughing at Tom Thibodeau for refusing to admit whether or not Jimmy Butler got an MRI, and Jimmy Butler screaming while falling out of a boat. I think these both got ousted from your bracket way too early. What do you have to say in your defense?
Well, I guess that just shows the current state of the Bulls that, you know, your two favorite moments had to do with people that left the organization like years ago. So right. That's where we're at as Bulls fans right now. And I was getting some blowback on that, but what I ideally, in a perfect world, I wanted people to fill out their own Bulls bracket. Like, I just put it together. I gave, you know, my version of it, but it was pretty cool to see some people like tweet at me their Final Four and their favorite moments. So I just hope people enjoyed looking at, you know, all those sort of funny moments from the season, because obviously this has sort of been a bummer of a year from the perspective of a Bulls fan, but, you know, you got to find the bright side in it one way or another.
Of course, I appreciate that. And a bright side for you, what appears to be a big bright side, I got to know, what is your obsession with that Bill Wennington Harold's Chicken selfie? Like, it's good, but I can't believe that it went as far as it did in your bracket. I mean, look, don't get me wrong. I fondly remember the days of bearded and still some hair on his head Bill Wennington hitting 14-foot baseline jumpers like it was clockwork as a part of that second three-peat team. And he's a great guy as part of Bulls broadcast these days, but what's so great about his Harold's Chicken selfie?
Yeah, I mostly just thought it was funny. I've done this a couple other years. I've done it at least two or three other years. And every year I always try to pick some like kind of really stupid thing that only I think is funny that generally makes people mad go all the way. I remember one year I picked Cuppy Coffee to win. I think the first year I did it, and people were getting like legitimately upset at me for how I filled out the Bulls bracket with, you know, the Dunkin' Donut race champion Cuppy Coffee ending up winning the tournament. So I was just trying to have some fun with it and seeing if I can get a reaction out of people.
That's fair. Another one that I was glad to see included is the hilarious campaign, you know, scooting around the Advocate Center picture when he was still recovering from that broken foot. Kind of you know, perfectly encapsulates the way that most fans, Bulls fans, feel about that trade with OKC still. Now that we have seen a bit more of campaign, he's been in for, you know, I think right around 10 or 11 games now as the Bulls made that rotation change, him replacing Jaren Grant as the backup point guard. There have been some facepalm campaign moments, but we've also seen a few moments of campaign as an effective guy getting to the rim, showing some aggression on the defensive end of the ball. Essentially, he doesn't look entirely useless. Do you think that campaign just needed a chance to get healthy and get an opportunity, or are you still holding out no hope for the fact that campaign can be a useful guy for the Bulls next season because they did pick up that option?
You know, people forget he was a lottery pick. He was a 14th pick in the draft a couple of years ago. So obviously he's got some talent, you know, in his game one way or another. Like, what I've always been trying to figure out is what's the ideal skill set for campaign? Like, when he was drafted, what did NBA teams see in him in terms of how he could impact the game positively? I think ideally he's someone who can create separation off the dribble, someone who could hit jumpers, you know, create his own shot and hit jumpers off the dribble, and someone who's quick enough to get around defenders, get to the hoop, and maybe create some offense for others. So I think that he's going to sort of be one of, you know, ideally he's that type of point guard who can sort of create something out of nothing. He's obviously not the biggest or the fastest. He's not by any means a great shooter, but I think that in a perfect world, campaign is someone who can give your offense, you know, a little bit of a boost off the bench. I'm not sure if I think that that's actually going to happen, especially with NBA point guards. It's like, that's the toughest position to crack it in the league is point guard. There's more point guards than any other position. So I wouldn't say I'm holding out hope for campaign, but I'm definitely rooting for the best. I mean, he seems like a pretty entertaining, cool guy, just from his social media presence. So I hope all the best for campaign, but I wouldn't say I'm optimistic about his NBA career.
I think that's pretty fair. Looking ahead, the Bulls have another tankathon game on deck tonight, playing the Memphis Grizzlies, who they beat just last week. The Kings and the Orlando Magic both picked up wins last night. The Knicks are playing tonight, and they're playing Philly, so they're probably going to lose again, and the Knicks are right on the Bulls' heels right now. The Bulls currently sitting in eighth. I mean, what are your thoughts on what the Bulls can or can't accomplish as far as ping pong balls in the next, you know, in the final 14 or 15 games that we have this season? Because right now they're in eighth, and you know, a game and a half back at Dallas, two and a half games back of a crowded bunch of Atlanta, Orlando, Brooklyn, Sacramento, and you know, and Memphis and Phoenix still don't even have 20 wins. Do you think that the Bulls can still make a move here, or do you think that they've kind of, you know, screwed themselves over in a way and can't recover from too many wins against all of these bad teams over the course of the season?
They screwed up so bad, man. I'm looking at the standings right now. They're five games out of the number one pick. Even just a week or two ago, it was only two games. So it's like, this is totally a wasted season. They couldn't have screwed up anymore. They traded Jimmy Butler so that they wouldn't be locked into the eighth seed. Instead, they're going to be locked into the eighth pick, you know, for eternity. It's like,
right,
this was the year where you wanted to get, be as bad as possible so that you could maximize your chances of finding a superstar in the draft. Now, like, what's the plan after this year? Like, are they going to go for the number one pick next year? They're not going to be as bad next year as they were supposed to be this year. Next year, they're probably just going to get the eighth pick again. And the year after that, they're probably just going to get the eighth pick again. Because, like, Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine are pretty talented, but they're going to get overpaid. They're not that good. I mean, they're fine. I enjoy watching them. I really like watching both players. So there's right. nothing against them. They're good players, too, for sure. They're valuable. But it's like, you had a legit top 10 player in Jimmy Butler. You traded him because you basically gave up. You thought you were too stupid to build a contending team in the crappy conference around one of the better players in the league. Like, they just screwed up that situation so badly. So then they punted on Butler's prime with the idea being, well, we'll just get a really high pick and then we'll find our next superstar. Well, you got the eighth pick, or maybe even the ninth pick, if you look at how much the Knicks are losing lately. So now you're just going to be locked into, like, Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine, they're all right, but, like, I mean, what is this Bulls team really trying to accomplish long-term? If you have Chris Dunn as your point guard and Zach LaVine as your two-guard, you're not going to be one of the better teams in the East, probably, unless you find some sort of transcendent stud in the draft, which they're most likely not going to do now that they have the eighth pick. And just right. going into this next year, are they going to gun for the number one pick again? No, they're just going to be better. They're going to be better than they were this current year, you would think. I mean, they won't have that Mirotić boost,
right?
Which will certainly help their tank chances.
But of course, starting next season, you got that, you know, the change, the implemented, you know, overhaul of the percentage breakdown. So even if they try to be bad again next year, their odds of getting a higher pick, you know, depending on where they are, will be even less than they were this year.
Yeah, those changes are really weird. Like, that could help them.
Right? Yeah.
Because
yeah.
now, I really don't think those changes are going to be effective. Because, like, look at how many teams are tanking this year. It's nine teams are tanking. So, like, next year, they're just flattening the odds for the top five. I think even more teams are going to tank, but you're just going to try to get in that top five. Like, teams are always going to play the odds.
Right.
So perhaps even help the Bulls, because they won't be the worst team. Maybe they could be the fifth worst team. And then theoretically, you know, that, or realistically, like, that would give them the same odds as being the worst team. But it's just like, you think about the long-term plan for the Bulls, and it's like, they were so concerned about being stuck in the middle of the playoffs, and now they're going to be stuck in the middle of the late lottery. They just screwed it up so badly, it's unbelievable. Now, granted, you could find a stud. No one thought Markin would be this good. He's fantastic. They got him with the seventh pick. So maybe they could find another stud with the eighth pick. And they also have, you know, it's going to be the 25th pick from Mirotić. They got to hit one home run with either of those two picks. Like, maybe you go safe with the eighth pick and swing for the fences with the 25th pick. Maybe you swing for the fences at eight and just try to get, you know, a college senior who could contribute. At 25, the Bulls have been good late in the draft historically, with Taj Gibson and Jimmy Butler being the two best examples. So it's just such a bummer. Like, they can't even tank right.
Speaking of, that was another excellent part of your Bulls bracket earlier this week. Was it was a 3 seed against a 14 seed, and it was tanking versus tank shaming. And of course, it was the NBA issuing the official warning to the Bulls about resting their healthy veterans, Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday. And then, of course, the Bulls responding to that and obliging and putting both of those veterans back into their rotation. And you have this great tweet from another one of our Bulls podcast friends, Stefan Noh of The Athletic, who said, "Yo, Bulls, I promise you, Adam Silver is not watching you play the Grizzlies. You don't have to play Justin Holiday this much." What are your thoughts on what went down between the Bulls front office discussing this with the league? And do you think that Adam Silver is kind of overstepping his bounds? Because in my opinion, the whole rest rule thing was more geared towards competitive teams in nationally televised games not resting their stars because it was hurting ratings and it was annoying fans who were paying good money to go to those games to see the star players of good teams play. But unless you're a diehard Bulls or Grizzlies fan, nobody's watching, nobody cares. And even if you are a Bulls fan, you're not going to the game and buying Bulls tickets. No offense to Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday, you're not going to watch them play. You're going to watch Dunn and LaVine and Markkanen. So I was just curious what you think about Silver and the league saying, "Hey, Bulls, you can't do this. You got to play your guys if they're healthy."
It's unbelievable how stupid the Bulls are. First of all, they never should have signed Justin Holiday if they were trying to tank. What are you signing him for? Like, they're a lot better with him on the court. They should have traded Lopez immediately, even if they were getting nothing in return. I mean, the goal of the season is to tank. If the goal of the season is to tank, then you need to have the worst team possible. Because you see now that 9 other teams are tanking, but those teams are smarter at being bad than the Bulls. The Bulls are too dumb to be bad. And then here's the other thing. What are the Bulls fighting the league on this for? The Bulls resting healthy players just goes against the entire competitive spirit of the league. You think the league's going to like that? There's no way. The league literally ousted Sam Hinkie from Philadelphia and basically suggested they should hire Jerry Colangelo because the Sixers were tanking too transparently. What happened for the Sixers during that stretch? They were the worst team in the league every year, and they got the 3rd pick. So there's some forces at play here with the lottery. No one knows what's going to happen, but you don't want to tempt the, you know, the karma of the league that the league's playing with.
Right.
So Bulls, like, your big market team, the league would maybe want to do you some favors in the lottery, especially if you're like a hardworking team that's trying to win some games. But then they're resting healthy players. Like, you cannot do that. Don't even have those players on the team. Just never should have signed Holiday. Trade Lopez. So I think that's really the bummer from what the Bulls did, I think, is totally bogus in terms of resting Lopez and Holiday. And they deserve to get yelled at for that because it totally goes against the competitive spirit of the league. Bulls, if you're going to tank, don't have good players. Like, just be as bad as possible. And, you know, I wish they would have just made they just can't be so transparent about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, when you're going to be that transparent about resting healthy players so you can lose on purpose, like, of course the league's not going to like that. You can't do that. What they should have done, like what the Lakers did a couple years ago, they signed Roy Hibbert. It's like everyone knows Roy Hibbert and the Carlos Boozer. Everyone knew Roy Hibbert, Carlos Boozer, and Ramon Sessions were horrible.
Yeah, washed up, useless.
Quote-unquote veterans that the league could look at and be like, oh, they're trying to compete.
Yeah.
The Lakers got in the same pick 3 years in a row or whatever now, 2 years in a row. So it's like, Bulls, you're just idiots. Like, the league obviously does not want you to tank so transparently. So don't be stupid about this. And then also get these guys off the team so that they can actually be in actual situations. Like, Robin Lopez is a damn good player. He's having one of the best years of his career. He's in the prime of his career. And the Bulls are just totally disrespecting him with this idea that he can't play. So I mean, I think a lot of Bulls fans probably view that as like, well, the league doesn't deserve to tell the Bulls what to do. The way I view it, the league runs everything. Like, you want the best chance at getting a high lottery pick? Don't make the league mad, is what I would say. I'm not saying it's rigged, but don't tempt fate, because you never know. I mean, the Sixers never got the first pick in the draft when they were the worst team every year. They fire Sam Hinkie. The league replaces him basically with Jerry Colangelo, who they recommend to the Sixers, and they get Ben Simmons. They get the first pick right away. So it's like, Bulls, I don't know why you're tempting fate. You're just being stupid.
We're chatting with Ricky O'Donnell of SB Nation here on Locked On Bulls. You can follow Ricky on Twitter at @SBN_Ricky. Let's shift our focus now to March Madness. As we're chatting, we are just a few hours away from tip-off of some of the first-round games. Obviously, a lot of NBA draft implications and exciting guys to watch, including some of today's matchups. We got the young and exciting Oklahoma point guard Trae Young, who is still, after a slump, leading all NCAA players in points and assists this season. Oklahoma and Rhode Island at 11:15 this morning. You got number two Duke and Marvin Bagley, as well as their center Wendell Carter, taking on Iona. You got the one seed Nova with Mikal Bridges playing 16 seed Radford early this evening. And you got Alabama and their point guard Colin Sexton, who lit Twitter on fire with his SEC tourney performance last week. Alabama and Virginia Tech playing tonight, 8:20 p.m. Of all of those guys that are getting their first game of the tourney tonight, who are you most excited to watch, and who are you most likely thinking is going to be in the Bulls' area of drafting, say the Bulls stick in somewhere between like 6 through 9?
Yeah, I don't know in terms of like opening round match. Well, the player I'm most excited to watch in general is Colin Sexton, because he's just fun to watch. He's a complete maniac. Mm-hmm. If he's the type of guy who talks trash to himself during the game. I got a chance to interview him as a high school recruit right before he entered college when he was at USA basketball camp. And the guy is one of the most ruthless competitors I've ever seen. He's so much fun to watch. With that being said, I still have Trae Young over Colin Sexton. And if you're going to swing for the fences, if you're the Bulls, I know a lot of people won't agree with this take, but I would probably take Trae Young over Colin Sexton for a couple reasons. First of all, he's a much better shooter. Colin Sexton's about a 30% three-pointer. Like, kind of the deal, the trade-off there is that Colin Sexton's bigger and faster.
Right.
Better at getting the hoop. He's elite at drawing fouls. But Trae Young's significantly better as a shooter and a passer. Like, Trae Young is a brilliant passer and such a good deep shooter. And, you know, Trae Young is not going to be Steph Curry, but if he was 75% of Steph Curry, I think that type of player could still have a major impact on the game just in terms of how he affects coverages with his off-the-ball gravity and his ability on the ball to, like, create something out of nothing and be able to hit deep shots off the dribble. Whereas Sexton, I don't think that Sexton is, like, super, super quick, despite being, you know, the bigger, faster player. Granted, you can say the same thing about James Harden. And like Harden, Sexton has a similar elite skill of getting to the foul line. Both are very good at changing pace. So I love watching Sexton play. I love watching Trae Young play. If it was up to me, I know a lot of people won't agree with this because Trae Young's going to be really bad on defense, but like Trae Young has a better chance to be a really special player. Whereas Sexton will be like, he'll be good, there's no doubt. But how much better is Sexton going to be than Chris Dunn?
Right.
I don't really know. However, Trae Young, like, he could potentially be amazing, or have a really positive impact on the game if he's able to still hit these deep shots off the dribble. Because we know he's a special passer. Like, if you're drafting a point guard, give me the better shooter and the better passer over the guy who's, like, bigger and faster but isn't, like, doesn't have elite quickness.
All right, that's fair. And then, you know, I mentioned Mikal Bridges of Nova. There's also Miles Bridges of Michigan State. They're playing on Friday evening, Michigan State and Bucknell, in a 3-14 matchup. You know, guys with similar games, both sort of, you know, cut from the 3-and-D NBA cloth. And two guys that if what people think is going to happen happens, and it's a lot of the bigs off the board first and Luka Doncic, and, you know, some of those 3-and-D wings, like both of the Bridges, are there in the, you know, 6 through 10 range where the Bulls are likely picking. Do you have a significant preference between those two, and who do you think is going to have a bigger impact on this tournament?
I would take Villanova's Mikal Bridges over Michigan State's Miles Bridges. Like, Miles Bridges, I think, will be effective in the league for sure. He'll put up some big games. He'll have lots of stick highlights. But ultimately, I feel like he's sort of a gimmick player because he's going to be a 6'6 power forward. He's a super explosive athlete. He's a decent shooter. He's not an elite shooter. And defensively, I don't really think he has the mindset to, like, be one of those guys where, like, he just gets the ball. You know what I mean? If you're ever playing pickup with someone who's really good defensively, they just, like, get the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Miles Bridges is not in the mindset to do that. I would take Mikal Bridges because he's a much better three-point shooter. I mean, the evolution of his three-point shooting has been unbelievable. He came into college as someone who couldn't shoot at all, and now he's like, I mean, the best-case scenario of Mikal Bridges is that he's running off screens like Klay Thompson. He's like a 43% three-point shooter. He's also a much better defensive player. I think Mikal Bridges does have that elite lockdown defensive mindset. He's got a 7-1 wingspan. He's able to like play in a press or play down low at Villanova, which is really interesting. But at the same time, he is a 4-year college guy. We know that the Bulls have a history of favoring those players, and typically it doesn't work out well for them. The other thing,
hey man, Denzel Valentine's having a hell of a year.
The other thing with Mikal Bridges, and I'm sort of talking myself in circles here, but like ideally, if you're drafting someone like Mikal Bridges, a 4-year college player who projects as like a great defensive wing who can shoot threes, but isn't going to create any offense off the dribble, that's still a valuable player. But the thing is that that type of player, if you're going to take him 8 overall, he's got to be able to check Jimmy Butler. He's got to be able to check DeMar DeRozan. He's got to be able to check LeBron. But Mikal Bridges is 200 pounds soaking wet. Like, yes, he's long, but he's so thin, especially in the lower body. It's like Jimmy Butler would just run over him. DeMar DeRozan is just going to run through him. So maybe he can add some strength and add some weight, but he's already kind of old compared to the rest of the players in this draft class. He's so skinny. I do love his defensive ability. Maybe he can guard point guards, you know? He could smother an opposing point guard with that length and his quickness. He's so quick. He's so long, and length and quickness probably do matter more than strength. But it's like, ideally, if you're drafting a 3-and-D wing who's not going to create offense off the dribble, you need him to be able to defend those elite wing scorers in the league. Like I said, Melo, DeRozan, Butler. And I just don't know if he has the strength to do it. So that's sort of the interesting quandary with Mikal Bridges, who I love. I love his game. He's awesome. He's going to be a very good role player in the NBA, there's no doubt. But it's like, the defense is going to be the swing attribute for him. Like, he's going to be good defensively, but is he going to be great defensively? And if he's going to be great defensively and can hit open three-pointers, I believe he's worth the 8th pick. But if he's not able to guard those big elite scoring wings, then I don't know. Then maybe his upside isn't as high as I want to believe it is.
All right, and then let's turn to some of the bigs that are playing leading into the weekend. I mentioned, obviously, Marvin Bagley and Wendell Carter of Duke playing today. Mo Bamba and his Longhorns are playing tomorrow afternoon. Speaking of Miles Bridges and Michigan State, his teammate Jaren Jackson Jr. is just rocketing up people's draft boards. People are now expecting him to go top 5, maybe even top 3. It seems like of all of the bigs, DeAndre Ayton is probably going to go 1 or 2, depending on who has that number 1 pick and whether or not they want Luka Doncic. So say that maybe one of Mo Bamba, Marvin Bagley, or Wendell Carter are on the board if the Bulls are picking 6 or 7, if they somehow manage to make that happen. Which of them would you most be interested in seeing paired with Lauri Markkanen in a Bulls front court?
Was Bamba, Bagley, and Carter?
Yeah. Do you think Bagley can play the 5 in the NBA?
I mean, maybe Markkanen can play the 5 in the NBA.
Interesting.
Bagley, I think Bagley, he's like kind of like Julius Randle. But he's a lot quicker. But it's like you could see the offensive skill there. But it's like defensively he doesn't have a position. And defense matters more as you go up the lineup. Like if he's a 5, he's got to be able to block shots. Marvin Bagley doesn't block shots at all. So no, I don't think he'd be a 5 in the NBA at all. But if you're 4, like now you ideally want a big wing in that position. Like is he going to be able to like guard the wings that now play the 4? I don't really know. Is he going to be able to punish them offensively? Maybe, but he's going to trade a lot defensively. And at that point, it's like you're kind of trading 2s for 3s. You know what I mean? Like everyone's running high pick and roll. You're going to have a better shooter than Marvin Bagley across from him. So maybe he can get 2s on him, but the other guy's just going to be getting 3s on him. So I like Bagley's game. I think he's eventually going to be really good. Maybe he will turn into a knockdown shooter eventually. His stroke looks pretty good. It's very slow. But I think he's got some holes in his game. Carter, I like. But again, like, he's like a slow five. Like, if he's your five, I'd rather have almost someone like Robert Williams, who plays for Texas A&M. He's like an elite athlete with a 7'4 wingspan. He could be like Clint Capella. So, like, could – my question is, like, could Wendell Carter even stay on the floor against the Rockets? Because you're just going to be running high pick and roll. He's going to be the center. Like, Clint Capella would run right past him. He's just not fast enough.
Right.
And maybe Wendell Carter – Wendell Carter has great ball skills. He's really talented offensively. But it's like you're trading twos for threes again, you know. And then who's my other one? Bamba?
Yeah.
Bamba should be awesome. I've been watching – I wrote a story on Bamba when he was at the end of his – sophomore year of high school when he was at USA basketball camp. I watched him at USA basketball camp, and there's, you know, Jason Tatum, and Josh Jackson, and Markel Fultz. And you see Bamba, and I'm like, that's the kid I'm writing about because he just looks so intriguing. I mean, his arms are just insane, 7'9 wingspan. He's pretty coordinated. If I'm saying that defense is more important than offense from the position of center, you want to go Bamba, but the problem with Bamba is you just watch him and he's not that good.
Yeah.
Like, I almost wonder if he has some Hashim Thabeet potential. Because he should be great, but it's like he's just not a good basketball player. I would say he's worse than Jared Allen, who was Texas's center last year. After watching Texas last year and Texas this year, it's like Jared Allen looks better than Bamba does, even though Bamba has all these physical you know, advantages over him. With that being said, to answer your question, finally, I'm going to take Bamba anyway, just because, I mean, he's 19. You can't teach the things that he can do. His three-point stroke looks pretty decent. I would just take him and hope he gets better, you know? Like, maybe in 3-4 years, he gets better, and then you have a really special player. Whereas, like, Carter, there's nothing he's going to be able to do to be faster. And Bagley, he's not going to get any longer. And Bagley's already, he's putting up such great numbers. It's like, is Bagley really going to change his game to start trying on defense? Like, no. He's dominating the NCAA. Everyone tells him how great he is. He's not going to change his game.
Yeah.
So Bamba, I think, has the best sort of mix of ideally what you want, but he's just not there yet. But who knows? Maybe he gets there eventually. So I would take Bamba, I guess.
Fair enough. All right, Ricky, I know you got a busy schedule today. We got a lot of college basketball on deck. So I'll let you go, but one final question, and I'll give you a quick plug here. I'm looking at this column of yours that just came out on SBNation.com this morning called This is What a Perfect NCAA Tournament Would Look Like. And by region, you break down upsets we'd like to see, matchups we want to see, player matchups we want to see. Really great stuff in here. Who are you taking as the team left standing in your bracket, and what Cinderella team do you really want to see go far in this tournament?
Well, Cinderella team, I got to ride for Loyola, right?
Right? Got to ride. I got them winning their first round matchup, but I didn't take them any further. I didn't have the balls to do it.
Me too. They're actually a really good team. Their point guard, Clayton Custer, was recruited by Fred Hoiberg at Iowa State. He ended up transferring to Iowa State after 1 year, but he was the MVC player of the year. He's super solid. They also have just a bunch of like 6'5 wings who can kind of shoot and are pretty strong. So Loyola's a legitimately good team. I mean, they beat Florida, who were top five in the country on the road this year. You know, they were ranked highly in a lot of the metrics throughout the season. So Loyola's the Cinderella I want to see for sure. Villanova was my preseason title pick, and that's who I stuck with when I did my instant bracket predictions for SB Nation. Jalen Brunson, another local guy, so good. He just gets anywhere he wants to on the floor in the college setting. Like, no one can stop him, basically. Villanova also has just so many supplemental scores. We already talked about Mikal Bridges' elite, like, role player tendencies in terms of being a 3-and-D guy. They also have Dante DiVincenzo, Phil Booth, and Amari Spellman, who are guys who can just get you a bucket in a pinch. With that being said, man, I'd love to see Arizona win it. It would be so much fun to see Ayton just go off. It would just be fantastic to see how the NCAA reacts to this school that allegedly broke all these rules. Still go through the tournament, cut down the nets. I think that, you know, Arizona winning would be the best case scenario, but If I had to bet on it, I would take Villanova.
All right, Ricky. Well, as always, we appreciate you sharing your time with us here on Locked On Bulls. You can catch all of Ricky's great college basketball and NBA coverage at SBNation.com. follow him on Twitter as this tournament progresses at @SBN_Ricky. Ricky, always a pleasure, man. Enjoy the tourney, and hopefully we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Want to give a thank you to Ricky O'Donnell for joining us today of SB Nation, college basketball and NBA writer. You can follow us on social media at Jordan C. Malley, at @Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls on Twitter. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and make sure you're subscribing to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Text and voicemail line at 331-979-1369. Once again, that's 331-979-1369. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, and for our guest Ricky O'Donnell, have a wonderful Thursday, Bulls Nation, and enjoy the first round of the NCAA tournament.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.